KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
Happy trails to you.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for another edition of Happy Trails. Joining Emily and I this morning, we have got Dave Snyder, who is the Executive Director of the California Bicycle Association. We're going to be talking about several things, including the pending 3-foot passing law. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning indeed. All righty. So we've been talking about this, I guess, for some time on the show. It's been bantied around for a while. It's been through the California State Senate and legislature. They've debated it. It's now, I guess, on the governor's desk, right? Ready to be
That's
signed?
Right.
Okay. So how has this process come to be at this point?
Well, it's been a couple of years. The last time the CHP had some issues with it, which we dealt with in this version, it had passed pretty easily, not unanimously, but pretty easily through the Assembly and the Senate over the course of the summer. And just as of last week, I landed on the governor's desk for his signature.
And it is expected he will sign it, yes?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of people have been asking me, like, oh, that sounds great, but how is that ever going to be enforced? So what are, you know, what is your organization's kind of thoughts on next steps for?
Well, here's one of the, what I think is one of the biggest and best implications of the bill, and I'll explain it by telling a story from someone that we heard about in Davis, California. He was riding his bike on the road, you know, in the portion of the lane toward the right side where you're supposed to, but somebody coming up behind him felt like just picking on him and felt like this person on a bike didn't belong on the road. And so he buzzed him real close, yelled at him out the window, and kept going. But surprise, surprise, a block later, there's a little bit of a traffic jam, and the driver gets stuck in traffic jam, and surprise, surprise, the police officer was right behind the whole time and saw the whole thing. And the bicyclist got the police officer's attention and said, you know, hey, that guy passed me too closely. And the officer said, well, did he hit you? And the bicycle rider said, well, no. And then the cop said, well, then it wasn't too close.
Wow.
and this law has a provision in it that says that you must give as much space as you can. So it effectively makes it very, very, very clear that you have to give at least three feet if you can, and in any case, as much as you can. So it'll help in cases which are really harassment. You know, it's not even unsafe passing. It's deliberate harassment, and that becomes illegal with this bill.
Well, I guess the good thing about that, I mean, you can't prevent people from being jerks with a law, but at least there is now some retribution that can be had, that there is actually law saying that what they were doing can't be done.
Exactly. You know, and like in any in anything, this is in any movement, in any kind of social change that you're trying to create, this is just a step. This law isn't going to make a huge difference in whether or not the average person can feel safe and comfortable riding a bike, but it's a step. And you know, the publicity that we got over the course of trying to get the bill passed, and then the work that we're going to do in the coming months and years in promoting the law and the requirement that you have to give as much space as you can, is going to help in changing people's attitudes. But it's just one step. We also need to change the streets themselves. We also need to redesign our streets and make them a little slower on streets where bikes are expected, and create special bike paths and bike trails so that everyday folks, you know, folks who don't really consider themselves bicyclists, folks who don't want to be part of this whole "I'm a bicycle rider" thing, but they just want to jump on their bike and go to the store, or go to their friend's house, that they can feel comfortable going for a bike ride.
Absolutely. And one other thing about the 3-foot passing law as well, which is good. I mean, obviously it gives you know, a legal arm to, or a legal remedy to someone who is harassing. But it also makes clear to good drivers who want to do the right thing that they can give the cyclist the space they need by, when it is safe, crossing over the center line. Before, that was, you know, you could not cross over a double yellow line, period. And, you know, if you were, you would just have to either pass a cyclist very closely or just stay behind him until it became safe to pass. Now, if it is safe, if there's no oncoming traffic, you can legally cross the double yellow line to give enough passing lane, which is good. Now that's codified into law, or it will be, as soon as the governor signs it. You know, it gives a good driver a way to help.
Yeah, that's really important, actually. I'm glad you brought that up. The double yellow line, it was designed for passing big vehicles. And so right. The engineers who decided whether that's going to be a dash line or a double yellow line weren't counting on the circumstance of passing a slow bicycle rider, which you can get around a lot faster. They also weren't counting on the circumstance of crossing the double yellow line by a couple of feet, which might be all you need to do.
Right.
To pass a bicycle rider, and that's a lot safer than having to cross across the whole way to cross a whole vehicle. So that provision is not contrary to safety at all. And of course, it says that very clearly that it has to be safe. And we think that drivers are capable of judging that themselves.
Oh, absolutely. The reality is, a lot of drivers have always done that, but now it becomes clear that it's law. A good example is, you know, right here in Ferndale, when you cross Fernbridge. Fernbridge is a very narrow bridge, but it's also quite long. It's a half a mile long, and there is no way to pass a cyclist on the bridge unless you cross over that double yellow line. And there have been, I used to go across it all the time. There have been several times where I got a very near miss, or I got a whack from a mirror. Or people would just stay behind me for the entire half mile, and I would just do my best to go as fast as I could, go across that thing, not trying to hold up the traffic too much. And then occasionally people would just do, you know, what now will become law, and just kind of pass a little bit over the double yellow line, go around, and boom, they're on their way. So that makes that a little clearer as well for the good drivers.
And Dave,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to change the subject to another legislation piece.
But please.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, you mentioned there's a lot that we can do with on-street and off-street facilities for bicyclists as well. And I know there was another piece of
If you
of
would like to make a call, please hang up
Uh-oh.
And try your call again.
I think we lost him.
If you need help, hang up and call your operator for assistance.
Hopefully he'll call back in.
I think he's calling back in right now. Let me just try doing this. And hopefully this is him right here. Dave, is that you?
Yep, I'm back.
Okay. We lost you there for a second. All righty. Good to have you back. All righty. So, Emily, again, you were saying?
Yeah, I was more curious about another piece of legislation coming up at the state with the better bikeways, especially since, Dave, you brought up there's a lot we can do both on the enforcement end for protecting cyclists, but also improving on-street and off-street facilities for cyclists. And this better bikeways legislation would make it a lot more flexible for jurisdictions to try new kind of bikeway designs, kind of new to California or new to the U.S. Could you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. The California law is pretty strict in terms of the kinds of bikeways that they allow a local jurisdiction to build. And the restrictions are very old-fashioned, decades old by now, stemming from the years of the 70s when California had the best rules about bikeway design. Well, since then, a lot has changed. California law has not. In places around the country, they're building bikeways with separation from traffic. They're putting up posts, they're curbs.
Wow, that's great.
They're moving the bike lane between the parked cars and the sidewalk. They're dealing with some of the problems that are inherent there with intersection. And it's shown to be very, very effective in attracting a lot more people to bicycling and in improving the safety of those streets. but in California, you're not allowed to build those things. In the 70s, some people built designs that were like that, and they built them very, very poorly. And the people who rode bicycles, we call them the one percenters, who will ride in traffic no matter what. You know, we're really working for the 99% of people who want to ride bikes, but the one percenters said, no, we don't want to ride in some side path where we might have to go a mile per hour or slower. We want to ride in with traffic. And so they effectively outlawed those kind of side paths.
Wow, no kidding.
And now we're fighting those one percenters to try to change the law so that we can make bikeways that are attractive to everybody.
So we need to occupy our bike paths,
yes.
Then, right?
the
99% need to occupy our bike paths. There we go. Indeed. All right. Well, that's so. If other states have gotten a little bit more progressive with regard to how they deal with bicycle traffic, how do we get California back in the lead?
We tried this year, and we had a partial success where we forced Caltrans to come up with an experimentation process to allow folks to experiment with different kinds of bikeway designs, but we want more than that. We just straight up allow it because we know these things work. And so we're going to try again next year with another bill that is more carefully focused, and we'll be prepared this time to deal with the one percenters who forced us to compromise this year.
Mm-hmm. So with success in other states, in other areas, it's not like you're reinventing the wheel here. It looks like you can point to specific examples of where it's working and how.
Of course. Yep, we sure can. The bicycling increases three times, and the rate of injury stays about the same. Rather, the number of injuries stay about the same. So you get the same amount of injuries, same amount of crashes, I should say, with three times the bicycle riders, which means that the crash rate is dropped by down to a third. So you have a 33% less chance of getting hit when you build these kind of things. It's very, 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 very effective.
Well, anything that improves safety and encourages cycling, I think most of us are for.
That's the other thing. I mean, you know, the whole driver awareness bit, what we've learned is that the single most thing that improves driver awareness of bicycle riders is simply having lots more bicycle riders
Absolutely.
On the street. You know, I mean, if you don't ever see a bicycle rider, you don't know what to do when you see one, or you think that they don't belong there. But after a while, you realize, oh, there are bicycle riders on the street, and I'm kind of here all the time, and I kind of have to deal with it. And you learn, you know,
yeah,
how to deal. And anyway,
that's actually a really good point. I visited my son in New York back in March, and there was a ton of cyclists running around in Manhattan, and it just looks like chaos. It looks like so dangerous, but you know, it's working because there's so many of them. They just seem to go with the traffic, it seems to be working. So that does seem to play into that, where there are, you know, lots of cyclists make awareness.
Yeah, well, that's new in New York, and that's only since they built the facilities, actually. That's only been in the last 5 or 10 years that they've gotten that.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing. So, Emily, there's other stuff you wanted to touch on there.
Yeah,
Emily.
Yeah. Well, Dave was up here in Fortuna for a workshop a couple months ago, and I was just curious, more in all of your work across the state, what are some other kind of small, more rural communities that are doing some really cool things for bikes?
We also did a thing in Ukiah, and they are doing some really cool things, and they need to do the same kind of thing that we recommended in Fortuna. And that's, I mean, Fortuna has like two or three schools on this one roadway. I forget which it is. And the roadway has a big wide median with left turn lanes and two lanes in each direction. It's designed for really fast traffic. And you go out there and you look at rush hour and you realize, you know what? It doesn't need all these traffic lanes. It really doesn't. And instead of spending tax money to build build sidewalks and bike paths, which is really expensive and hard to do and really not necessary. It's a lot easier and cheaper to just take out a traffic lane in each direction and put in a nice wide bike lane. You could even put some protection in there if you wanted. And the 99 minutes out of 100, or like all but a few minutes a day, drivers won't experience the slightest impact. And for a few minutes a day, when you've got a bunch of cars on there, they might be delayed by a few seconds. So it's that's the only price to pay for a drastic increase in safety on this street that serves three schools.
Yeah. Well, we had some good improvements in Fortuna along Ross Hill Road, and the council adopted a slower school speed limit, kind of 25 in front of the schools on Ross Hill that you're talking about, which hadn't really been there and wasn't being enforced, and 15 miles an hour on some other streets with nearby schools. But when a street is designed to be going 40 to 50, it seems pretty, you know, artificial to just have a school speed zone of 25 miles an hour for the short distance when, both of taking out a lane and having a wider shoulder and bike lane, that not only provides, you know, safer access for bicyclists and pedestrians, it's also really going to narrow sight distance and slow cars down as well.
Yeah, kind of kills two birds with one stone there, which is fantastic. We're rapidly running out of time. So, Emily, is there other things that we need to touch on, any things that are coming down the road that we need to keep our eyes on?
Yeah, I would just say for everyone to look forward to next week. We'll be talking with Bill Keir of the North Coast Railroad on the show about the upcoming NCRA committee meeting, which will start the discussions about the future of the rail up here on the North Coast and around Humboldt Bay. So look forward to that. And next week, we'll be talking with one of the NCRA board members.
I'm so looking forward to that conversation.
Yes.
And Dave, thank you again for taking the time to talk with us. Any word as to when the governor is signing this 3-foot passing law?
Pay attention to calbike.org. You can go there right now and sign up to our list to get the updates.
All righty. All right, Dave Snyder, Executive Director of the California Bicycle Coalition, thank you for talking with us today. And
thank you for inviting me.
Mm-hmm. And Emily, as always.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you, Emily.
Uh-huh. And this conversation and all conversations for Happy Trails, you will find podcasts at iTunes and at khum.com. Just look up Happy Trails, and you will find it right there.
Happy Trails to you.